It's not complicated. Call it creative. Call it art. Call it design. It's the Design Coach on Lake 96.1.
Hi.
Hi.
Do you see how calm I am after I've had my...
For a moment.
My Christmas cocktail to kick off the last show of 2025.
It is the last show of 2025.
Oh my gosh, good morning everyone. You're listening to The Design Coach right here on Lake 96.1 with your host, Philip Sassano and Nancy. I just want to let everybody know that, it would not be a finale to 2025 if we did not celebrate at least one easy cocktail experience. And we're gonna lead this way, okay? Into what this is basically like our Christmas show.
I mean, you're not gonna get an argument from me.
We're not. Mm-hmm. And here's what we're facing. What we're facing in this moment, okay, is the fact that we are on the precipice of my ravioli extravaganza later today.
Ooh.
Oh my gosh! So for those of you who are not familiar with that, if you go on our Facebook page, you'll see my family just enjoying this amazing family tradition, which I'm so excited about. But I'm also excited about today's show because it's brought to you by Appalachian Sipping Cream. Now, they have not officially sponsored the show. I'm just letting you know. I wish they were a sponsor of the show.
Quite frankly, they're just officially sponsoring my life.
If you want easy Christmas holiday season in a glass, this is it. We are you and I are enjoying the Appalachian Sipping Cream liqueur, and the flavor we're enjoying is butter pecan.
Okay. To which I'm already addicted because you've turned me onto this a long time ago.
And let me just explain to you what I love so much about this invention is it's you can drink it straight and it's delicious. That's what we're doing today.
100%.
We're just enjoying this, you know, libation over easy ice
shots. No, I'm just kidding.
Just, you know, it's too good
for the record.
It's too good to do shots.
Yeah, I know.
Right?
Yeah, that would go down too quick.
And it's just like, I don't care how you garnish it, whether it's cinnamon stick or nutmeg or whipped cream or whatever it is.
Ooh,
you could mix this with almost anything.
Hot chocolate is a good one.
This in hot chocolate. You could put whiskey in this. You could put probably everything except gin. And you'd be fine.
No vodka.
You could do rum.
Vodka,
remember, it's the most boring of spirits.
Right, do something with vodka.
Remember, I've said on its best day, it's tasteless and odorless, okay? It's not exactly the most exciting spirit because vodka needs help.
Yeah.
But all I'm saying is when it comes to the whiskey and the rum, it's perfect for that.
It is.
Like, it's just, it's sweet, it's great. If you haven't tried it, they have a number of different flavors.
You know the butter rum lifesavers, yes. Butterscotch? Basically, lifesavers, butterscotch discs, the little yellow grandma candy or whatever. Mm. That's exactly what it tastes like. And it is so smooth. It is,
so
and
good.
It's also very dangerous. I may or may not be an expert on this particular alcoholic beverage product.
Well, it's okay. But here's what I
but
do.
But it's all your fault.
Do yourself a favor and go look up Appalachian Sipping Cream. And it'll come up in all of its glory with all of its different flavors. And I encourage you to get a bottle this holiday season if you would like to purchase
jar. It comes in a mason jar.
And I would I would encourage you to save the mason jar.
And
cool.
I do. You know what else?
Cool. Everything about it's pretty cool.
Last year, so they also have, or they did, and I haven't seen them yet this year, but I haven't really.
The butter pudding, or the bread pudding one is insane.
The banana pudding.
Yes, that was crazy.
Every flavor is good. They have a chocolate, like a chocolatey one somehow. They have all different flavors. Remember you brought in, like there was Eggo waffle.
It's just a beautifully crafted,
yes,
easy, like, and here's the thing about it, it's just easy.
Yeah,
you know, it comes right out of the mason jar. You don't have to even pour, you can pour it in like almost like a half a highball,
yeah,
right, or and even like half a rocks
garnish
glass.
It
half a rocks
pretty
glass is probably enough. Garnish it pretty and you're good to go. But
so
it's a fun experimental drink too, to just sort of introduce different types of, you know, liquor into it.
And if you would like, I don't know if they have these, but Bruno's Liquors has a huge variety of this stuff.
Yeah,
okay?
Locally, that's amazing.
Over here in Lake Geneva. But they had, last year, they had a big candy cane, huge candy cane, and it had small little jars in it of all different flavors.
Yeah.
So it would have like six different flavors, the strawberry, the chocolate, the buttercream. They have apple pie that's not a creamery, or it's not a cream one. It's a clear one.
You could add everything from, I mean, you could even go lower tier. You could go fireball in this for a cinnamon flavor.
For real.
You could add a little bit of apple jack in this. You could add a lot of stuff that's like, even the crown apple is good in this. Like you don't have to do a higher end whiskey, but I'm just letting you know. That's our recommendation, and that's what we are enjoying on today's show.
We are enjoying this on today's show.
Also, on today's show, I want to go big air. And I want to piggyback on last week's show about bringing extra to the holiday season.
Woohoo!
And we and if you haven't listened to that, and you go back to lake961.com and you can go listen to the archive show, or you can go to Spotify. Mm-hmm. You can check us out there. But what I want you to do is these shows are linked, but I am so inspired as we head into 2026, because Nancy, there's just so many exciting opportunities that everybody's, we've been sort of building to it all year. And I can't thank my team enough for crescendoing at the right time. Like, mm-hmm. you know, they are definitely, I mean, they've listened, they're taking the coaching, they're taking the guidance, they're applying it, and they're really working in a true spirit of service, but not from a perspective that I think embodies what I'm going to talk about today, which is, are you familiar with the book Unreasonable Hospitality?
No.
Are you familiar with that book? Mm-mm. It's written through the experience of a restaurateur by the name of Will Gadara, okay, and who Julie actually introduced me to a talk that he did that actually she had a link on, and I watched it, and it sort of encapsulated the book, but I want to talk about this concept of unreasonable hospitality.
Okay.
And immediately, you know how I love, like, you know, I love these catchphrases, right? That, like, you're like, okay, well, what does that mean? Like, there, sometimes you just come up with a catchphrase. It's instantly intriguing.
I am intrigued.
Right? Like, almost like, you know, one of the things that resonates with the design coach for us is this concept of durable elegance, or like comfortable elegance, right? Like this durable elegance. Well, how can something be elegant and durable? Like, what does that mean? And a lot of times we break that down to, you know, what I believe to be the chemistry of these fabrics that are now both durable and beautiful looking.
And elegant, right?
And elegant, right? So you can have these elevated spaces that also feel inviting.
Mm-hmm.
Well, this concept of unreasonable hospitality is very popular. The book is very popular. He basically writes it from the perspective of his experience in becoming the world's number one restaurant in the world.
Whoa.
In New York City.
Okay.
And to preface this, because we're going to dig into pieces of this, and we're going to relate it to how I believe it might just be for me, my new, like, my 2026 mantra.
Okay.
Is identifying all of the touch points, both personally and professionally, where you can elevate your impact and experience in service of others. I'm going to say that again. Identifying all of the various touch points to elevate, right? Enhance, mm-hmm. improve, have an impact in the spirit of service. And I can't think of a better time of year to start that mindset, right? Than the holiday season.
Right.
I'm just, our floors got laid this week in the new office. I like to see the dream office in the building that I now own come together. It's really humbling.
Yeah.
Cause I did it smart. Like I don't feel like I extended myself. I was equal parts designer and smart business person in mm-hmm. this. Like I feel like the team's going to move into 2026 with a new home, and we can't wait to show it off to everybody.
Yeah, I right? can't wait to
because
see
we
it.
Can't because then we got to then we got to hoof it on making sure we get the vault open.
Right,
up, right,
right.
But our office is where I want my clients to have an experience, and more importantly, I want my team to be able to feel like they're in a space where they can dream on behalf of our clients. It's such an exciting endeavor. Like, I'm just so blessed. I mean, honestly, just to have Julie and everybody in my camp and all of my team just like understanding why we wanted to do this and why this is important for us moving forward. We want to experience the same sort of legacy play that we're providing for our clients. And this concept of unreasonable hospitality plays into that. I'm noticing now all of the ways, Nancy, from hearing this guy talk.
Mm-hmm.
About what the touch points are and the way he pushed his team to provide an experience that was not just about the product they were delivering. Because let's be honest, when you think of a restaurant and you think of a restaurateur,
mm-hmm.
you think about the food.
Right.
I mean, you think about the decor and you think
the
about
ambience,
the experience and you want
right.
the ambiance, but mm-hmm. it seems to be oftentimes secondary to the menu. Like, what kind of food do they serve? Well, you don't look for a restaurant and you'd be like, you know, what's the ambiance? I don't care if the food sucks. Like,
right.
You know, like, it's right. about the food, right? Which is obvious. It's an obvious statement. But this conversation goes on to talk about the fact that the experience that made them the number one restaurant in the world, okay, and a 3-star Michelin restaurant, was about so much more than the food. And I'm going to describe for everybody sort of throughout this show, I'm going to link it constantly between the tenets of what I believe to be their understanding in this book, Unreasonable Hospitality, and the way I want you to entertain in your home, and maybe even the way I want your relationships to feel, and maybe the way you can have an impact actually being the creator of experiences. Because that's in essence what he's referring to is
sure.
the ability to just receive an experience is kind of where a lot of people live. You know, they're okay just having it done for them. They're okay just being the receiver of the gift, in quotes.
Mm-hmm.
But what does it mean to be the giver of the gift? What does it mean to create the experience? And how much better of a position that is than being the receiver? Like, how much more you get back tenfold? Because he talked about that a lot in the talk.
Sure, yeah.
And what was interesting about when they had applied for the first round of their entrance into the top 50 restaurants in the world. He talks about going to London mm-hmm. and about how you don't know kind of where you are on the list. They announce it at this gala.
Ooh.
And so he talks about how he's in his best outfit and, you know, you don't know quite where you're sitting and you don't know who you're sitting next to. And you're surrounded by the legends. Legends of the restaurant world are at this event. And they start at the bottom and they start at like number 50. And his first year, they announce their restaurant first.
Ooh. Ouch.
So like, unlike the Oscars where like, you know what I'm saying? Like, you almost, the longer you have to wait to hear your name, the better off it is.
Right.
And they were number 50. Now listen, just being on the list and being invited to that,
it's huge.
That's quite an accomplishment. Right. At the time, I think there were a 1-star Michelin restaurant. But what he talked about was just so fascinating about how he just wanted to sort of like slink away. You know what I mean? Like, it was like they had gained this recognition of being like top 50 restaurant in the world. And that he's like, he wasn't satisfied with that.
Right.
Right? That he talked about like, okay, well, I'm grateful to be here. We worked hard to get here, but I wonder what it takes to be number one. And I feel like, although life, you know, I'm not trying to make the analogy. I'm not trying to put this in a competitive space. I'm trying to put this in the only person you're competing against is the version of yourself yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, can you be a better person tomorrow than you were today? And in what ways can you have a greater impact? Create more experiences and give the gift I think is inherent in all of us this holiday season. Stay with us. You're listening to The Design Coach right here on Lake 96.1. Welcome back, everyone. You're listening to The Design Coach right here on Lake 96.1 with your host, Philip Sassano. And Merry Christmas and Happy Holidays, everybody. Like, this is my favorite time of year.
It is.
It's my favorite. It's one of my favorite days. This ravioli day is one of my favorite days.
You know. I would imagine, yeah.
It's just, it's all things good, right? Like, it's all things food, family, gathering, fun, frivolity, right? Like, it's just amazing.
Yeah.
So
everybody.
I can't think of a better way to start it out.
So are all your kids back, or what's happening with the?
All the kids are back, and we treat it like it's sort of like a pub concept. Like, whoever can make the ravioli making,
yeah,
you know, it's an open door.
Right.
We tell everybody when it starts. But what's great is all of the nieces and nephews and all of the aunts and the uncles and everybody has like a role.
Mm-hmm.
So they sort of know where to plug in.
Right.
And what's interesting is they've recently started to make comments about like, you know, like any new people, you know, because occasionally you'll get future spouses or girlfriends that come to this event and they're invited to be a part of that. And we welcome that, right?
Like, of course.
It's great.
Well, you might as well get to know. There's no better place to get to know the whole family.
Yeah, right. You get to know a lot of people when you put them to work on the assembly line of the Sassano family ravioli. Yeah, you just learn a lot.
They're not going to make the cut.
or they're going to, or you know how to job them.
Yes.
Okay, let's just put it that way, okay? So,
or actually, we like your significant other better than you.
I'm not saying that it's a family test disguised as an activity, because it's not.
Well,
but it certainly does reveal that, okay? So anyway, I'm looking forward to that. And I can't thank everybody. I just want to express my gratitude to everybody who's supported us throughout the year. Clients, obviously, my awesome team and awesome, you know, my great family. But and you, Nancy, thank you for, you know, another awesome year of
You're welcome.
You know, we got
thank
on Spotify
you.
This year. It was just another. It was another great year where we can catapult into 2026, delivering our version of creativity and sort of helping people connect with it. And so, in that effort, I wanted to, you know, we're profiling right now this book called Unreasonable Hospitality, and I want to further the discussion. In the second segments, I'm going to give you the hows, but in this next segment, I still want to lay out the process that this particular restaurateur went through, because Nancy, it's fascinating, and as we related in the last two segments of the show, it's so obvious, but at the same time, it's not.
So, what is his definition of unreasonable hospitality?
Well, it starts with two really big tenets. The first one is human connection over service. In other words, is the service you're providing, is the human connection baked into the service? You're not just doing the service to do the job.
Right.
Or to deliver an excellent product. You're trying to deliver an excellent product and an excellent experience on a human level.
Right.
Which you know I love.
Right.
You know I'm all about that. Like, I want, because, you know, it's like Maya Angelou's quote, they're not going to remember what you said, but they're going to remember how you made them feel.
Mm-hmm. 100%.
And people do, they do remember the feeling that you leave them with. He did state, and this was fascinating, because the second thing he said is go beyond reasonable expectations. Because here's what everyone else is doing. They're doing reasonable expectations. Well, that's reasonable.
Mm-hmm.
That's the expectation of this. But how do you become excellent really was his charge and his challenge to himself and his team. So after they placed at this big gala 50 of the top 50 restaurants in the world, and he didn't make number one, and he said in the talk that when the camera panned to him at 50, he just had a shocked look on his face of disappointment.
Aww.
So you can imagine, like, you don't want your name to be called at 50. You'd like to be higher. You don't want to be the first name called.
But at the very least, 49.
Yeah, at the very least, 49, 39, whatever it is, right? But, like, not the first one called, but he was the first one called. And he really, instead of taking that and sort of, he talks about initially really internalizing it, like really, really like grabbing a bottle of vodka, sitting in the corner and just like sulking.
Mm-hmm.
And then he talks about, or whatever spirit he was drinking, I can't remember what he said.
Probably not vodka.
But, well, it is clear and it is effective. But that's the only good thing I can say about vodka. But what he ended up saying was, he says, he went back to his team and he said, okay, here's what we're going to do. We're going to identify every single touch point that a customer has in their arc of an experience with this restaurant, down to the most granular. And what he did is he invited all of the people associated with the restaurant, from owners who had ownership stake to the dishwasher. And he put them all in tables of, like, I don't know, however many groups there were, but he put them all in groups. And he said, I want you to identify as many touch points as possible in the client experience. So they go through that exercise, they go through it for a few minutes, they come back, and they come back with like 30 each. He's like, not enough. I want you to now go back again, and I want you to get even more granular, okay, with the amount of touch points someone has in a restaurant. They came back with like 70 plus.
Wow.
I think at the end he said they were something around 130 different individual touch points. And then they were asking, well, what's the point of listing all of these? Like, why are we doing this exercise? He says, we are now going to systematically go through every single touch point and elevate it with unreasonable hospitality. Therefore, every single experience beyond the food was what they were looking to elevate. Because they knew that the other restaurants were all producing great food. Every great chef is producing great food, inventive food. That in and of itself, in that space, and you can put this, and he does say this in the talk, he applies this to any industry.
Well, it's
interesting. We've talked about this on a number of different
We have days. Talked about this, and can I just say this? So, you know, understanding, you know, I produce this show, I produce another show, I co-host another show, but the majority of my job is writing commercials.
Yeah.
And when a And I'm totally into this. Like, this is, I'm going to actually use this. I just let you know.
You can't do what everyone else is doing and be good.
If I have to write another commercial about a Friday fish fry.
Yes.
Everybody has a Friday fish fry.
And everybody's got good cod, and everyone's got good baked, and everyone's got good, like,
I'm
like, talk about something
stop.
Extra.
Right. I'm not putting fish fry. If you don't
no
have
doubt.
A fish fry, that's unusual.
Yeah, that.
Right?
That actually, you, yes.
Right? So,
right.
And so
the world
I
doesn't
get this.
End and begin with prime rib. Okay,
no.
Let's be really honest.
No.
That's another one.
No. And okay. So I 100% am going to steal this. Because I have
Please
already
do.
Said that. Like you like you just said, everybody does this. What do you do?
And they
what
think
is it
that
about
makes
you?
Them special because they think their food is better.
And we're competing.
So what
no.
he went on to say was, because so many restaurants are chef driven, every
yeah.
single chef at the top is
right.
driven and innovative.
100%.
They're
yep.
all good.
Of course.
And because taste is such an individual, right, subjective, you know what I'm saying? Like, you know, what you like to eat, I might not like to eat.
Right.
So it's like, regardless of the chef, how do you know what's amazing?
Right.
If you don't like it, I don't care if the top chef makes me octopus, I don't love the texture. There's nothing that's going to make me love it.
Seafood, not going to do
right?
it.
Right.
Right.
Like, I, you know what I mean? Like, I need my clams charred, almost like in like a four-alarm fire
right.
in order to eat them because I just don't like the texture. So there's no mm-hmm. amount of like doctoring or chef or chemistry
nope.
or inventiveness that's going to make me love that. So what he goes on to say is once they identified these 130 touch points and they went on to, they went systematically into elevating them, it was amazing when you made people aware of the individual touch points. As you outlined them, mm-hmm. made them granular, and looked to elevate them, down to how does the fork feel? How do the plates feel when they come out?
Mm-hmm.
How does the napkin feel when it folds over your lap? Right? Like, what's the... It's the experience of even, like, walking in the door.
Mm-hmm.
How many restaurants do you go into where you love... When you love the food, but you have to wait, like, at the front because, like... They're understaffed and
right.
they you know, the hostess is doing a million other things or the host is doing a million other things and can't get you ready and can't see you. That's not a big deal. He talks about, interestingly enough, he talks about so many, but the one that stuck with me was the waiting for the check.
Yes.
It's the worst part because he's like, he said the restaurateurs are in a lose-lose. Bring it too early.
Right.
It feels like I'm rushing you.
Yeah.
Bring it too late and you're tapping
Bored.
Your fingers and
right.
you lose interest and you'll remember how long it took to get the bill. Right. So he said the restaurateurs are in a lose-lose. What they started to do is they delivered the bill with a bottle of cognac.
Oh.
And said, stay as long as you'd like. Have as much as you'd like. Right. But here's a bottle of cognac. And for, you know, however many glasses to serve the table as an after-dinner drink. And enjoy and deliver the bill with the bottle. Because what it said was, I don't care how long you stay. You already have your bill. And he's like, to be honest with you, nobody ever really drank more than like, I mean, it was a rarity that they would drink the bottle.
Right.
So you seal the bottle back up, right? And you've got it.
Right.
But he said that maybe they finished half a glass, but that wasn't the point. The point was, here's a gift from us
uh-huh.
to say thank you for being here. No rush. When you're ready, right?
Right.
What an amazing, I don't know how
smart.
Many, it was super smart. It's like when you get the bill at a diner and they give you one of those mints.
Yeah.
With the bill.
Right.
At the diner. Do you know that he said they did a study on that and the diners that delivered a small piece of candy with their bill,
mm-hmm.
the tips were 18% higher. Because of the 2 cent mint
right.
that they delivered with the bill.
Wow.
There is a psychology.
I was going to say, it's
you guys,
all psychological.
This is what I'm trying to get a point.
100%.
There is a psychology to extra.
Yeah. Yeah.
To piggyback on last week's show. And what was fascinating was Julie brought this to my attention. And I believe some of these things sometimes are divine. Like, I don't know. They manifest themselves. And like, this wasn't even on my radar. And then I did the extra show.
Mm-hmm.
And then this came up this week. And Julie's like, you got to listen to this.
Mm-hmm.
I'm hooked. I mean, I'm remembering all of the details of this 25 to 30 minute video. And that's how big of an impression it made on me.
Yeah.
But what it went on to say, and the best story that I think I can account for is he was at a table and he wasn't the chef. He was actually the dining room guy. Right? Which was fascinating, right?
Yeah.
So he was hyper-focused on this dining experience. But he said he was with, he was in the restaurant, and the restaurant was, they had some foreigners who came into New York from out of town. And they were eating at the best restaurants in, I think it was New York or maybe even the country. Mm-hmm. And they chose this restaurant to finish their, they were going to the airport. They were going to go back to Europe. And he heard them talking about how the one thing that they regretted was they never got to try a Chicago or a New York style hot dog. He sort of overheard this.
Right.
So he immediately ran out to the cart, the hot dog cart.
Uh-huh.
Like a couple blocks away or a block away. And brought the hot dog to the chef and begged the chef to cut it into four pieces and plate it. And the chef took it and said, okay, fine, I'll do it. Like, he plated the hot dog, cut it into four beautiful pieces, a little bit of relish, a little bit of dollop of whatever. Like, uh-huh. I'm sure artistically
sure.
did some beautiful sprig of something on it, as he outlines in the speech. And he brought it to the Europeans. They were blown away.
Uh-huh.
How many three-star Michelin restaurants would have the you-know-what to mm-hmm. serve a hot dog from the street?
Right.
To their patrons,
right.
just because they overheard a conversation about the fact that that would elevate their experience. I'm sorry. Wow. That's extra.
Genius.
And I'm letting you know that sensitivity to that is what I want you to feel this holiday season. What do you know about someone? What do you know about what someone's going through? What do you know about someone's situation where just your little bit of extra makes them feel so much better this holiday season? Anyway, stay with us. You're listening to The Design Coach right here on Lake 96.1. Welcome back, everyone. You're listening to The Design Coach right here on Lake 96.1 with your host, Philip Sassano. I'm loving this show, Nancy, because I got to be honest with you. I just really feel like this is something that I think needs to be talked about.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, as we explore this concept of unreasonable hospitality, which is a book by, you know, this restaurateur, Will, I hope I'm not butchering this name, but it's, you know, Guidara. That I'm just in awe of the way he was speaking, the relentless and unapologetic tone was as engaging as the story. Mm-hmm. I mean, borderline, I will tell you, the particular speech that I heard, and I'm sure he's given this speech multiple times, almost came off a little bit like you weren't, it was so brash in its unapologetic approach that it was almost like, whoa. Like, talk about telling truth.
Right.
Right. Just right. Like, I mean, as Joey would say, Zoe might say, and this is probably a dated term, but spitting facts. Like, she literally throwing it all out there in a way that was both inspirational and challenging simultaneously. Now, I will tell you, that is a complexion of our firm. We are not a firm at The Design Coach that's not going to challenge your existing understanding of what you believe your design style is. Because most of the people who come to us, if they could identify their design style, would just execute it.
Right. All right. If they could do it, they would.
No, that's a fact. I mean, right. The fact is that they maybe they have an appreciation for multiple styles, or maybe they have an appreciation for multiple, you know, things. But what we're really trying to do at The Vault is exactly what unreasonable hospitality is. And like this new office that I'm trying to craft, which is part like, I don't know, like Mad Men meets like James Bond. Like, it's really, no, I'm not kidding you. It's like, it's got some throwback. It's got some mid-century modern. It's going to have some spy. It's going to have... I mean, I have a Narnia door, okay, where you walk through the Narnia door to try to get to the, like, it's over the top.
Right.
From an experiential perspective, in a smart way, right? In a way that's very clean.
Right.
It's very clean, right? You're not walking into an antique store. What you're walking into is a curated experience specifically designed to heighten your sense of creativity and to get you to open up.
Exactly.
And so where the design side feels one way, what's interesting about the way we've crafted it is that it's kind of dark and brooding and very organized. And then when you get to the vault side, it's more of like this free-for-all circus of amazing fabrics, creativity, and product. Right. And I'm now thinking about all of these touch points that I want to be able to identify across the business when people come to the vault as part of that experience. And it's fascinating how when we think about the concepts that are outlined in this unreasonable hospitality, the human connection over service was the biggest one. Mm-hmm. In other words, your service and your product doesn't mean anything if it's not, you don't have some human connection. It's the same reason you go to the same bar because you know the bartender.
Right.
That matters to you. You might be able to get a better drink somewhere else. You might even be able to get a better service or food somewhere else. But if you have that connection, that's what truly people are craving. Mm-hmm. He believes people are craving human connection. He went on to say that.
Well, 100% people do business with their friends.
And what we've done is we've made it because of legal. We've litigated our way out of it.
Oh, yeah.
We've sanitized our way out of it because of whatever you can and cannot say. All of that in the corporate space has sanitized it to the point where now the pendulum is swinging. The human connection is what people want.
Right.
What he's saying is, okay, that's flawed, right? Or a lot of people take the easy way out. And let's be honest, if your total restaurant is just food driven, you're not special. There's a lot of restaurants that are just food driven. The same way in interior design, if we're just product driven, we kind of all sell the same products. Like, I don't sell anything necessarily beyond found objects, you know what I mean, that are like one of a kind that I find that any other designer can't sell. It's how we put it together, not what we sell.
McDonald's is food driven.
Yes.
Like, that's where you're, you know, I mean.
But it's also experience driven because think about the Happy Meal.
Grinch meal.
No, think about the Happy Meal.
Right.
Brilliant. Think about the Happy Meal. Brilliant. Think about the reason that you go to Chick-fil-A. You get a chicken sandwich anywhere. And a good one, probably.
Yeah.
You go because they're nice.
Yeah.
And you know that their brand is they're good, they're nice. And you're like, today I just want nice. Can I just have nice?
Yeah.
Right? But if you think about how a lot of companies like Chick-fil-A like are just dipping their toe in the water of that experience, I don't want that. I want the experience of the Vault.
Right.
And I want the experience with TDC to be rooted in unreasonable hospitality. And I want to take the next couple of segments to sort of outline that for you with some specifics, because I think it's really fascinating. It says here, I'm just going to give you the primer of it, okay? So the book draws a sharp line between competent service and true hospitality. Competent service is sort of is the lowest bar for a high-performance, you know, high-performance business.
Right, that's okay? The minimum.
And then there's true hospitality. The problem is we apply hospitality to just restaurants, hotels, you know what I'm saying? Like entertainment types of businesses.
Right, experience.
But what if hospitality as a concept is just a way of serving people with a human connection? Understanding what they're going through, understanding where they're struggling, understanding where there's problems that can be solved, where your business can help lift them, lighten the load, and solve the problem. Isn't that really what good businesses do? They solve problems.
Well, and I think that the concept of, for instance, a showroom, wouldn't that be your hospitality area, but again, if it's just product samples and a couple displays or whatever, that's great. You can, again, you know, you step out of the restaurant business. You can go to all different kinds of places and get that.
Let's relate it to what everybody's going to do next week. They're going to host Christmas.
Right.
Are you just going to provide a competent experience,
venue,
an obligatory experience, or are you going to truly be hospitable?
Right.
In other words, are you going to try harder? Are you going to be extra?
Step outside that box.
If you want to create a memorable experience, and here's what I find interesting. People are like, well, you know, those experiences you can't engineer.
Yeah, you can.
Yeah, you can. Yeah, you can by not dictating an outcome, but providing true service from the heart. Because the second part of this human connection over services, experiences become memorable when teams seek emotional connection, not just technical execution. That's what we're experiencing with the design coach. I want the team's head and heart
right
in the design.
Right, right.
My clients want my head and my heart in the design. So guests remember how they felt, not what they bought or ate. He goes on, he's repeated this several times in this speech, Will does, and he talks about people don't even remember what they had at my restaurant.
Right.
They don't remember the food, but they remember these other things, right, that went on. He talks about a couple that got engaged at City Hall.
Mm-hmm.
And so technically their families weren't getting along, so they just got married at City Hall. And they didn't have, like, you know, they weren't having a wedding. They just came to the restaurant to celebrate the wedding.
Right.
They just got married at City Hall. And they talked about their first dance. Then in the room above the restaurant, he had all the staff after hours go up there as like a pseudo reception. And after the meal, walked them up to this pseudo reception and played their favorite song with the restaurant staff. That's extra. That's unreasonable hospitality. That is listening and understanding a moment. And what we do is we're so selfish and in our own heads sometimes.
That's so sweet.
About what we don't have that we can't muster up the soul to give because we're hurting. In fact, that's maybe when we need it the most is when we're hurting and everyone's hurting. On a lot of levels. You and I have talked about this. We're tearing up, both of us right now talking about it, because we know exactly what that means. You talked off the break, you talked about like the slipping away piece, right?
Right.
Of like, you know, when people pass.
Right.
Like you don't want their memory to pass. The only way to keep it alive is to keep giving, because then you get that feeling because you're doing it to honor them. I mean, listen, you don't think that my father and my mother, who are no longer here, my dad just recently passed, you don't think that they instilled a work ethic in me that is relentless?
Mm-hmm.
And it's not because I'm a workaholic. It's because I know the work matters. It's because I know the work has an intentionality behind it and always has, that when we creatively build things together, it bonds me and I crave that connection. I crave the connection through creativity and through building something interesting and something amazing and something extra with my clients. That's why I don't like copycat design.
Right.
When there's a popular design style, to me, it's the sanitized version of every restaurant providing a competent service.
Fish fry.
Yes, I'm plugged in. I'm delivering Mountain Modern.
Right.
I understand what it is. It has some spice of personality to the extent that the client was willing to give it to me, but the reality is that it's not unique.
No.
And what I love about weird traditions, and this is what I love about weird traditions, I love when families have these traditions that are sort of really just unique to their family. And it can be like, you know, whatever. You know, some families have game nights. Some families have I knew a family that went to the movies.
Yeah.
Christmas Day in the afternoon.
Yeah.
Like that was just sort of their tradition. I'm not saying you need, I'm not here to define that for you. What I am here is to say, provide the extra experience. Work a little harder.
Pay attention
and give. You talked off air about someone that you were talking about who's just having a rough time going through this holiday season, mm-hmm. and how you felt you might be able to make a small gesture to have a big impact. That's what he's referring to. And he says it's not that hard. Also, it's not that expensive.
No.
Like when I talk about the hot dog run for the Europeans who hadn't tried a New York hot dog, and he ran out to the cart and the chef plated it up. What did the hot dog cost? $1?
Yeah.
$2? And what did the effort take? They had ketchup, they had relish, they had mustard, they had, you're right, they had plates, and they served. But think about the memory that left with that particular client.
Right.
That's the kind of stuff I'm not talking
about. Well, both of those instances, the hot dog and the first dance, is a result of somebody paying attention to the detail, to the specific person. Not everybody went upstairs and had that first dance, because that wasn't appropriate. But that's, I think, is that part of what he talked about was the other part of his everybody is different.
But the other
remember.
But the other part that he talked about, which is really important for everyone to hear, is you have to leave yourself time to think about it.
Yeah.
See, what we don't do is it's really hard to live that level of intentionality when we're rushing.
Right. Right. Oh, yeah.
So
yeah.
When we're slapping it together, that's really difficult. You know when you can do that? When you've done it enough times. That it's like breathing.
Right.
Okay. When we come back from the break, we're going to dive more into this concept of unreasonable hospitality and how it can make for the most memorable holiday season you've ever had. Stay with us. You're listening to The Design Coach right here on Lake 96.1. If you've missed all or part of the show, you can always check it out at leak961.com and Spotify. I didn't mean to make you cry, but it's fine. I didn't want to cry either, but it's fine. Endorphins.
I mean, that dance, that's just...
Isn't that amazing? Welcome back, everyone. You're listening to The Design Coach right here on Leak 96.1 with your host, Philip Sassano. And I want to remind everybody that we're building on a show from last week called the, it's like extra. Like, how do you provide extra this holiday season to have maybe the best holiday season, regardless of where you're at in life yet? And how do you keep moving in the right direction to give your gift, which I think is a really important message. But, we were talking about when it becomes like breathing, you had asked me, well, don't you become complacent when it just becomes easy? No. What happens is your radar is up now and you crave extra at a greater level the next time around.
Okay.
If you do it right.
Right.
But it's a habit. I think what stood out to me was in his talk and in this book is the discipline that it takes to do the work.
Right.
Because the work makes it easy. Do you see what I'm saying there? Mm-hmm. Like if you're trying something hard, the more you practice, the better you get at it.
Right.
The easier it is. And you make everyone look at something that's extraordinary, and for you, it's ordinary.
Yeah. It's still hard. That's how you just not for you.
That's how you live. Like, I was asked recently on a podcast that aired this past Friday for Powerhouse Smart. I was asked about my definition of like a life well lived, and my definition was very. It was interesting because I really do believe this. It's options. The world is an amazing place to explore, and if you're not evaluating your options about trying new experiences and trying new things and looking to elevate experiences and looking to give and to share and to talk and to communicate and to connect, if you're not doing that, what are you doing? Like,
living.
You're just eating and breathing and sleeping.
Right.
Like, you're just consuming. Like, what are you doing? Right? And if it's too routine, that to me seems to be even more ridiculous. I'm not saying that you don't need routine to ground yourself. But as long as that grounding leads to a launch on some capacity or a recharge on some capacity, that's important. Because as we go on to sort of explore the tenets of this unreasonable hospitality, he talks a little bit about this going above and beyond. This is an interesting takeaway. These one-off improvised touches, okay, like sourcing food from someone's home country.
Ooh, yeah.
That was another thing that they did.
Yeah.
Okay. Creates stories guests retell, and then they become a strategic differentiator, and they become ambassadors. How many times have you heard me say, I don't want clients. I want ambassadors for the Design Coach that say, the journey that this particular team took us on, either as difficult as it was rewarding, and it led to an outcome no one else could have delivered for me, because it was about the client, not about the designer.
Right.
You've heard me say that on a number of different occasions.
Gosh, yeah.
I don't want you to think that I'm trying to be the coolest kid in the room. I'm trying to make you, the client, the coolest kid in every room. That's a completely different, that's a flipping of the script to the way a lot of design professionals operate.
Yeah.
Architects and builders included. That it becomes about what they can deliver for you from their perspective versus what's your vision and how do I utilize my talents, my resources, and my creativity to deliver your vision.
I think that you're saying too that they're not necessarily grateful for the opportunity that a client provides to them.
Oh, I think gratitude is 100% the foundation of unreasonable hospitality.
Yeah.
You're grateful that they walked in, so you're here. What am I going to do for you?
Right.
What can I
think of now?
Not how many tables.
I'm so glad you're here.
Not how many tables am I going to turn? Right. Not any of that stuff.
Right. Like, how can I? What do I get to do
today? The quality of both the product and the experience. How often are we focused and people say, "Well, if the product's good, that's really all that matters." It's not.
No.
Not anymore.
No.
And it never was.
No.
It never was true. I mean, I go back to this culture piece too, because the next segment that we talked about in this is. Exceptional hospitality demands a culture where the staff feels cared for, trusted, and empowered to act on behalf of the guest without permission.
Right.
How many times do business owners want everything ran by them. Listen, I am guilty of this as well. I mean, I am guilty of this where it's like I have just recently started, not I don't say recently, but I've started to do this more and more where I've said, give me your idea. Give me your idea. Well, give me your next steps. Come to me with that. And then let's mind meld the experience. Because I want to make sure that I'm gleaning from the people that I trust whether or not my lens is calibrated correctly. I'm not arrogant enough to think that I have the best idea in the room. I like to think that I do, but I also like to think that I'm building the next generation of coaches who can create and elevate an experience through unreasonable hospitality.
Well, that
and I just happen to do it in the form of interior design, project management, and lifestyle service.
Well, and every good manager surrounds themselves with people who make things better.
And as a manager, you have to be okay if the answer that satisfied or that elevated the experience wasn't the answer you came up with.
Right. I mean, isn't that why you pay people?
Well, you'd like to think so. The problem is that there's...
Bring something okay,
but,
to the table.
But I'll say it this way. I cannot tell you how many people in my profession, architects and builders alike, designers alike, are so attached to their version of the vision that they make collaboration almost impossible.
Well, that's in every industry.
Yeah, it is.
It is.
But what I oftentimes is I am infuriated when it's at the detriment of the client, either financially or from a value perspective. Because sometimes the more expensive, quote unquote, option is the right value for the home.
Right. And sometimes it's not.
And sometimes it's not. But it's about having that kind of conversation.
Paying attention.
So he goes on to talk about in his speech, one size fits one.
Right.
Not one size fits all.
Right. That was
one size fits one.
Right.
Your radio show client that wants to do a commercial has a very specific aim for what they're trying to achieve. So therefore, if you were to shove them a template, you know, like read through of their commercial, you're just doing what everyone else would be doing.
It's a robot.
It's a robot.
That's what we call, honestly, we have a term for that. When you want something and it's generic and it's not creative and it's not, it's called a rip and read.
Yeah.
Okay. And that you don't want to rip and read. You want something creative. You want something that makes you stand out. Same thing for you. But well, it takes paying attention. It takes talking to them and finding exactly what
in this talk and in this book, Guidara emphasizes hiring for attitude and involving everyone in defining values.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when we talk about creative, comprehensive, and concierge as really the tenets that hold the design coach together, we're dead serious about that.
Mm-hmm.
Comprehensive finances, comprehensive solutions to design, creative solutions to financing, creative solutions to design, right?
Right.
And then all delivered in a concierge, client-centered mindset, focus, attitude, and effort.
Right.
Period. End of story. And that's what we're striving for. Do we succeed every day? No. Okay, but if you're shooting for that and the clients know that that's your intent, they're a lot more likely to give you the benefit of the doubt if you know you're going to be harder on yourself than they would be. That's where you want to be.
Right.
You know, I talked to my team about going on offense. This is the other thing that I didn't realize that was analogous to this, which is so much of the world is defensive. You're in a reactive posture all the time. Well, partly that's because you're not in motion to be able to make things. You're not causing the ripple, you're just reacting to the ripple in the water.
Right.
True successful individuals make the ripples. They make the waves.
Mm-hmm.
Other people ride them, and other people drown in them. Where do you want to be? I personally would rather be making waves.
Yeah.
Okay? Than riding waves, because eventually they end, and then I got to wait for the next wave.
And somebody else is in control
of
that.
And I certainly don't want to be drowning in them.
Right.
It's a choice. It's a choice.
Leader, follower.
And that's what I thought was fascinating when he talks about, you know, I talked to, in this recent podcast too on Powerhouse Smart about, you know, I'm an autodidact, which is basically self-taught. That's basically the definition. There are many designers. Thomas O'Brien is self-taught. Kelly Wurstler is self-taught. She started in graphic design. Thomas O'Brien was a history major. And these are really well-known, famous designers who have had a Bunny Williams is another one. Like a great level of success, self-taught. That's what I am, Nancy. I'm an autodidact. From artist to contractor to design professional, right, to now owner's rep, managing all of these teams. I'm an autodidact. And what I love about that is that I wasn't confined by the major. I wasn't confined by the schooling. I just sought to learn to improve. I love that for everyone as a 2026 mantra. Become a student again. It's okay, wherever you start in your journey of learning, dedicate yourself to the schooling, which, by the way, has never been more accessible online.
True.
You've never seen more YouTube, tutorial, TikTok, Instagram. You've never had more tutorials about how to be extra than ever before.
Especially around the holidays like you're talking about
today.
Oh my gosh,
you're flipping past some of the best ideas right. You should probably be implementing.
And it could be simple. It could be a new family game experience. It can be a new family adventure. It could be more personal and just a one-on-one with somebody.
I can't tell you enough, especially host-style leadership is another takeaway.
Oh yeah?
But I'm going to phrase it to everybody this way. Leaders bring the weather. So the energy that you bring, sunshine, enthusiasm, clarity, right? Appreciation, love, you bring the weather. A lot of people sort of react to the weather.
Yeah.
You know, when you own a company like I do, and you're trying to lead a team like I am, and you're trying to deliver a top-tier service that's relatively innovative like we are at The Design Coach, as a leader, I got to bring the weather. I've got to be steady. I can be enthusiastic, but I also have to back it up with clarity. I can't just spout out ideas with no execution or no plan.
Yeah.
I can't do that. Because that temporary high that people feel from the excitement of the inspiration eventually fades into having to get it done. Eventually, I got to get it in the house. Yeah, I got to get it done, right?
Yeah.
So what I love about that, this host-style leadership includes making charitable assumptions about people, praising publicly, coaching privately, because a lot of people don't like to learn in front of other people. They like to learn privately. And turning diverse individuals into a cohesive team. People who have different backgrounds. You know what? Isn't that the story of America? That we all come from different backgrounds and different, but we all find a common thread that ties us together. Guys, that's what the holidays really stand for. Is the holidays on so many levels, and Christmas and the new year, it represents our common thread of the appreciation for the year that was, for the things we were able to accomplish, and maybe the ways we will be better next year. You know, I want to end the show with just thinking about employing this holiday season an unreasonable level of hospitality, showing your love and sharing your gifts. It will make for the most amazing holiday season you've ever had. Anyway, thank you for listening. Have a great holiday season, everybody. You've been coached.